Good morning and welcome to the programme today. Raising the retirement age is the government's plan, but is there another way to solve the pensions time bomb? As some people venture back out onto the streets of Kyiv today, those in Mariupol are still terrified to attempt to leave. Was it the mask, the ultra-cautious social distancing, supercharged immunity or just pure luck? Why have some people managed to avoid getting COVID altogether? Professor Cliona O'Farrelly explains. Meet the devout GAA man, who's also a devout Muslim and devoted to making the GAA a welcoming place for all. And when life gives you lemons, make cake. Shane Smith tells us why the sharp citrus flavour is a hero in the kitchen. Also, it's Friday, so the gathering will be here to talk through the big stories of the week. Our text number 51551, email today cb@rte.ie, or on Twitter we are at Today with Claire. Now, it's reported this morning that senior government officials are discussing the doomsday scenarios that could unfold in the energy sector as a result of the war in Ukraine. Schools and hospitals would be prioritised, but the question of ensuring food supply chains has also emerged. In a moment, I'll be joined by Justin Urquhart-Stewart from the investment platform Regionally and Dr. Muireann Lynch, Senior Research Officer at the ESRI, to give us a picture of how potential shortages could bite. But first, Arthur Beasley is Current Affairs Editor with the Irish Times and has that story this morning. And Arthur's on the line now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
You've been speaking, Arthur, to senior sources in government who are clearly concerned, very concerned about the shortages. What have they been saying?
I think there's a sense that if these discussions weren't underway, that something would be wrong. There is considerable concern that the flow of Russian oil and gas into Europe could be interrupted at any point, really, in the war. Vladimir Putin yesterday handed down a decree saying that unfriendly European countries would have to pay for Russian energy in rubles, something they are refusing to do. That decree has yet to be tested, but it underscores that this is a very, very volatile situation in which the continuity of supply could be threatened.
How would that affect us?
Well, most of our gas imports come from Norway via the British energy system. But if the supply of Russian energy into Europe were to be stopped or interrupted, even in a small way, well, then it would have a very considerable impact on the price of gas and the price of oil. And consumers, people are already seeing that in their electricity bills and in their gas bills, even as we speak. That would be a very, very considerable shock. And even if there was no doubt over short-term supplies into Ireland's energy network, the price would rocket even to a greater extent than we're already seeing.
All right, and we've already had plenty of shocks on that front.
Of course we have.
But the question, Arthur, of maintaining food supply chain connectivity, that's emerged as a big issue because of pressures on the international food supply chain. Explain what's happening there.
Well, I mean, Ukraine is known as the breadbasket of Europe, and this is the planting season right now for grain, and the people who are supposed to be doing the planting, people who work on farms, these large industrialized farms, many of those people are actually defending their country. So there is a concern that you'll have an interruption to grain supplies, and Russia is also a major grain exporter, and that down the line, while there's no immediate threat to food supplies, that the supply of grain into international markets becomes constrained. It becomes very, very difficult to maintain stability in food markets. And that is why in these conversations that are underway, where you have essentially the establishment of a pecking order, what's going to be the priority if gas and energy has to be rationed? That is why food is a concern, in addition to very important questions like keeping the lights on in hospitals and schools. And also you have the question of continuity of supplies into the pharmaceutical sector here, major consumers of energy, and this too is under discussion.
And these are active conversations. And is there a timeline on when this might be likely to happen?
I think the sense up to the decree of yesterday was that this was a situation that could become really quite serious towards the end of the year when demand for energy is at its highest in the winter period. But this intervention yesterday by Vladimir Putin, although some say it could be self-defeating, serves to emphasize that this is a very volatile situation that is changing day by day. And already we've had steps taken by the German government to start the procedures that could lead to energy rationing in Germany. So it is quite serious.
It certainly is. Arthur, thank you for joining us. Arthur Beasley there from the Irish Times. And I'm joined, as I said, by Justin Urquhart-Stewart from Regionally, an investment platform. Good morning, Justin.
Good morning, Julia.
We were hearing from Arthur there about this deadline today. Europe is facing this, expected and requested by Vladimir Putin to start paying for Russian gas in rubles or have the contracts cancelled for that gas. That leaves the possibility open of gas being switched off, Justin. Do you believe that could happen?
It has the potential for doing so. What's interesting with this is you compare the way that they're going about it. I think it's always the Americans play poker, but the Russians play chess. And you sometimes wonder if they're actually being slightly smarter about it. But there's a key issue here. To talk about paying in rubles, the reality is that, a payment for gas would be paid to a Russian bank, say Gazprom's own bank, and it would be in euros. Gazprom Bank would then convert that to rubles. So technically, they wouldn't be paying for the gas in rubles. It's still in euro. But then the Gazprom Bank will then translate it into rubles. No doubt, at a very healthy spread, thus adding to the cost. So here we are seeing this brinkmanship, and who's going to blink first with it? Well, I think actually what you're going to find is the Europeans will actually probably stand up against it, but they've got to be very careful. They need to make sure there are other supplies behind, whether it's natural gas coming from Qatar, the second largest producer in the world after Russia, or whether it's other supplies coming from America. And you've already seen adjustments to the strategic reserves that Biden has released now in America to try and address some of the short-term fuel issues there. But that is only a short-term fix. Okay. It doesn't solve the underlying problem.
Justin, to go back to the request from Vladimir Putin to pay in rubles. If Europe were to concede to that, does that negate the impact of the sanctions on Russia?
No, I don't think it does, because the main issue with the sanctions will be, and we've seen all the issues with regard to shops closing and brands being taken out of Russia, the main way to control it is the weakness of Russia, and that is Putin's cash reserves. He had over $600 billion, but a lot of those are in foreign banks, and of course they're now frozen. And it's not just a matter of the SWIFT money transmission system, or the which is basically a glorified form of the email with passwords. It's actually freezing what's known as the correspondent banking account, which handle those dollars. If you freeze those accounts, then Russia's, about 80% of Russia's dollar payments externally get stopped straight away. So the question is, therefore, then who is actually going to back down on this? Well, of course, as far as Putin's concerned, he doesn't have to worry too much about public opinion because it's all controlled. But actually more of an issue in Europe to make sure that Europe is seen to be strong enough and not being effectively blackmailed into this. But he can only do that so long as it's got the assurances of further supply, not now, but coming through. So it's a very interesting game of, well, chess or poker, take your pick. But at the moment, we're looking slightly weaker at the moment in Europe overall. I'd say we're probably two pieces short of a chess set.
It's extraordinary when you think about the amounts of money that are transferred every day to Russia from Europe for gas and oil. It's close to $1 billion a day, isn't it? It's hundreds of millions.
It is, and of course Russia needs that money, because remember that the Russian economy, and I know we all sort of look at the size of Russia and how vast it is, well actually in terms of the value of the GDP, the whole economy, it's actually about half that of the United Kingdom. It's actually a relatively small-sized economy, and of course it hasn't been growing, it's been shrinking. So if we think that actually firing off a missile is expensive, then actually do that with a country whose economy is much, much smaller. Putin cannot afford a long war. He needed that blitzkrieg. It failed. Now does he have to try and operate it, and if you don't have the cash. So I'm afraid he'll be trying all sorts of ways to try and ensure he gets payment, hence this form of blackmail to make sure that the Europeans pay up in any form.
So what happens if the worst comes to pass and he carries out his threat? Now, Germany, we know, has activated this emergency plan. That could lead to rationing of gas supplies. Would other countries have to do the same?
Certainly have to take some reaction to it, because it's not so much just to where the gas goes to Germany, it's the knock-on effect into the pool of the market in Europe. So whether it's the United Kingdom or it's the Republic, we're all drawing off that same pool, and sources coming into it from Norway, from other areas, can obviously be increased, but you're never going to know exactly how much is going to be agreed to. The good news is, at least we're heading towards summer. But as Mr. Beasley said earlier, we need to worry about what comes to the winter when it starts to get cold again. But also because that other key thing coming out of Ukraine, which also Mr. Beasley highlighted, which was the price of commodities, wheat and barley and such like. And we know that's actually going to be a problem in the autumn because, as we know, this is the sowing time now for that crop to come through. Therefore, you're not going to get such a big crop. Therefore, the price of that basic for commodities, and that'll affect us directly in Ireland, will be going up yet again. So it's not just today's inflation. You can see autumnal inflation and risk coming through then. And that affects the one word that runs an economy, and that is confidence. If you don't have confidence, people don't spend. Companies don't invest. And if that happens for any length of time, especially with inflation, you have this thing called stagflation, a stagnant economy with inflation. It's very difficult to shake off. And of course, if people are now losing their confidence and you have two quarters of a shrinking economy, that's a recession. And I'm afraid that's something that the whole of Europe is probably going to be looking at this year.
Yes, and that word has been rattling around this week. We've tried to ignore it, Justin, but it keeps cropping up. And as we wait to see what happens with this energy situation with Russia, is it likely then that states and individuals will start stocking up on fuel?
Certainly, yes. I mean, we've never ever used that awful phrase of actually stockpiling, because as soon as you do that, everyone rushes off to go and buy loo rolls or whatever it happens to be that they're frightened of. But it is inevitable. So whether you're a farmer with diesel or maybe central heating's on oil, people will want to actually make sure they've got enough at a lower price, or at least just to secure some delivery, some provision for the future. But it's going to be very difficult if everyone tries to do that. So could there be rationing? Yes, there could. There will be also encouragement to maybe use more nighttime periods when there's less demand on the system, and you can often have cheaper production of energy at that stage. But it's going to have to be operated very carefully, because the more you constrict the economy by putting those tighteners in, then the more you're going to actually increase the opportunity of the economy slowing down and having a weaker year financially. And of course, this isn't just affecting governments, it affects companies, but of course, it's at the end of it, us at the food chain, at the bottom end of the food chain, is the consumer, and particularly the weakest, those who've retired, maybe on fixed income, and of course those on poorer income levels, they're the ones that need the most hope. So commodity prices rising, that's baked, bread, pasta, all those elements. Fuel prices, so you have to choose then, am I going to put the heating on or not, at what level? This is going to be a year of the squeeze, and it's going to be a very painful one.
Justin, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Justin Urquhart-Stewart there from the investment platform Regionally. I'm also joined on the line by Dr. Muireann Lynch, Senior Research Officer at the ESRI. And Reuters is reporting just now that the Eurozone inflation has surged to 7.5% in March, hitting another record high, and there are months still left before it's expected to peak. The latest figures from Eurostat will make grim reading for the European Central Bank, because it is far beyond those expectations for the 6.6% rate forecast. Muireann, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Claire.
I'm not sure how much of Justin you heard there, but he's predicting the year of the squeeze. I'd say that's putting it mildly.
I think so, yeah. I mean, one of the things I would say is that we cannot insulate everybody in our society from the effects of war. That this is just one of those things that you can't avoid. So the choices that we have really are about trying to direct our resources towards those least able to afford it. And we, you know, Justin did a very good job of lining out all of the different trade-offs and all of the dangers that we have on all sides. And basically, whatever policy levers you activate, some people are going to be hurt. And the reality is we have to make choices in order to make sure that the costs of this war are borne by those who are most able to afford it, unfortunately.
And Arthur Beasley there was talking about the government's contingency plans for energy rationing. Now, how much of an impact could that have on the Irish economy?
So in the short term, an interruption to gas supplies would have a very big impact. It's hard to know what would happen in the medium to long term simply because people will adjust, the economy will move away. But in the short term, rationing will get you through a period where there's constrained supply, and that's what we could be looking at if indeed the gas supply from Russia is constricted or turned off altogether. And what that means is it does mean real impacts in terms of people's day-to-day lives, in terms of their energy usage, but it also does obviously have economic impacts as well.
Yes, and we've all seen the increasing bills. We know the cost of the things that we buy every day, they're going up. But Cliff Taylor, writing in today's Irish Times, says that while average incomes will rise this year, the purchasing power of Irish households will fall for the first time since the period after the financial crash in 2008. How prepared are we for what's coming down the line?
I think in terms of the level of inflation we're seeing, obviously, when the last budget was brought in, for example, we were anticipating inflation, but we weren't anticipating anything like what we're seeing, which is why purchasing power will fall. And in terms of how prepared are we, I mean, some households can absorb that shock, others can't, particularly households on low and fixed incomes. So what I would say is we've got the price effect, which we're already seeing and we're going to continue to see. But if there's an actual quantity effect, if there's actual rationing of gas supplies, then the way we tend to deal with those is, first of all, we try to get those who are using gas but can use something else to switch. So there are some electricity generation plants, for example, that can run on diesel. It's best for them to run on gas, but they can burn diesel. So we tend to go down that route first. But then after that, you're really starting to restrict gas supply to maybe some of the large manufacturing sectors. We were talking there about the pharmaceutical sector in particular. They use an awful lot of energy, but they pay a lot of tax. So if it gets to the point where we're actually having to dial down some industrial production, that could also have an impact on taxation, which of course means that the government then is limited in terms of the choices it can make if it sees its tax revenues going down in certain areas.
Anyone who lived through the last one doesn't want to hear talk of a recession, Muireann, but the word is around, it's in the ether. Could it be that bleak?
Well, I mean, in Ireland so far, we don't think that growth is certainly going to be lower than we had anticipated before this crisis. It doesn't look yet like we're in looking toward the economy actually shrinking, which is a recession. But it all remains to be seen because we're getting new data every day and things tend to be worse than we anticipated, certainly on the inflationary side. But I would hope that we're not looking at the kind of constraints that we saw in the last recession. But with things changing day to day at this point, no one can really predict.
Yeah, and the uncertainty of war means that we can talk about the various possibilities that we could be facing. But the reality is we can't plan very far ahead for these eventualities.
No, we can't. I mean, the funny thing is, Claire, I've been in energy research since about 2009, 2010. And the thing that people always talked about was, oh, what if Russia switches off the gas? But no one ever said any more than that, because we always knew that there was no obvious answer. It was just something that you had to be aware of, that we could face a massive supply crunch one day. And it would be very difficult. Now, I mean, we're in a better position than we would have been had we not done things like invested so heavily in renewables, and had we not done things like made sure that we had some diversification on our power grid. We do have some coal generation, for example, so we're not 100% reliant on gas. But in the end of the day, particularly in the short term, you can't prepare for these things. It is possible to increase energy efficiency, to move away from fossil fuels toward renewables, or by reducing energy demand through energy efficiency and switching away. But those are more medium-term measures. So it's kind of over kind of the next 1 to 90 days, let's say, if there was an interruption in gas supplies tomorrow, that's just going to be felt in unprecedented ways.
And what can be done, and what are the unprecedented ways that it would be felt? You're talking rationing.
Yeah, I mean, if it gets to the point where there is rationing, yeah. I mean, some people will have remembered in the oil crises where there were queues down the road to get to the local petrol station, and there were limits on how much you could buy and that kind of thing. That could be what we're looking at. But a lot of it depends on how much storage do we manage to build up over the next few months. So certainly governments are going to want to start to increase their strategic storage of things like gas. The United States is saying that they're going to make more liquefied natural gas available to Europe. And then this winter, if we get lucky with a mild winter, we might muddle through. Whereas if all of this coincides with some severe cold weather or even very high energy demand over the summer, let's say we get a particularly hot summer and there's high air conditioning demand in some of the warmer European countries, that's when things start to get a little bit more dicey.
All right, we're down to praying for the weather to be kind to us. Dr. Moira Lynch, thank you very much for joining us from the ESRI. Michael Moroney is CEO of the Association of Farm and Forestry Contractors, and he's been in touch with the programme this morning to say they've asked the government to ring fence 200 million litres of agri-diesel for that sector. He said if his sector doesn't have the fuel, it can't harvest the grass for silage, and expensive and scarce animal feed would have to be imported in the coming months and indeed up to next winter. Keep your texts and comments coming in, 51551. But coming up next, more unease over the increase in the pension age, but this time it's from government TDs.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.